Welcome to the Coconuts Podcast. Today is February 19, 2021. The Coconuts Podcast is your home for top trending news and pop culture from all across Southeast Asia and Hong Kong. I'm Vim Shunmugam.
And I'm Summer Lee. What is up, Vim?
Hola!
What's up?
God damn it, what are we doing? Just, like, leave it at that. Like, it's just an awkward... Just leave it. Just leave like a weird, like awkward pause for like 5 minutes of the intro.
I think Byron's gonna ask to have a little chat with us. I can feel it.
Summer, you are coming off of your New Year, your Chinese New Year. How much of that cashola did you acquire? Do you even like, what are the rules? That's what I kind of want to know. What are the rules of like giving and getting like money during CNY?
Well, as soon as you're married, you gotta give money, so never get married, y'all. I kid, but yeah.
So if you're married, then you give, like, but then is there like an age limit to like the person who wants to get a red packet?
No, dude. So, like, if you are the single fun aunt forever, you will just keep receiving red packets.
Yeah.
Yeah. So, that's a life hack. The financial advice. Yeah. So, that's the financial advice I'm giving y'all today.
You get paid to be single.
Exactly. In this economy, it's pretty welcome.
So true. And, like, is there, and I think, like, giving, is this still multiples of, like, 8? Am I getting that right? Or butchered? Am I butchering that?
No,
you can't give just like 10 bucks, right? Like, oh, it is? It's something like that? Okay.
You can do. I guess it's an even number.
Okay.
Yeah. Usually an even number. That's all you need to do. Do not offend people and don't give $4. Yeah, that's about it.
Oh, yeah. Because 4 is like inauspicious, right? Like it's a bad
Yeah,
number.
It sounds like dai in Chinese, like 4 is 四, and then die in Chinese is 四. So they kind of sound similar. So don't tell somebody die, you know? Don't give $4.
Fair enough. Yeah. So are you going to buy, do you have enough to buy a new car or a new house?
Yeah. So maybe a Lego car for now.
Fair enough.
Mm-hmm. Advertise with our in-house agency Grove. Fast, funny, digital. Join forces with us to slay buzzwords, rise above the noise, and sow the seeds of something great. Get in touch via coconuts.co/grove.
Yay! And now for our top stories.
Yiki.
You know, I am still kind of a boomer. Like, I do buy stuff online, but not as much as I should. I think because of, you know, the lockdown last year, certainly I bought like a whole bunch of stuff. But our first story actually is why I hate buying stuff online. So a guy bought a $300 TV off of Lazada, which is, you know, a popular e-commerce site. And instead of getting a TV, he got a little note from the seller saying that basically there was no stocks. Logistically, like, the TV wasn't available. And it also, like, wished him good luck in the future. It's kind of a funny story. The letter said that he had to wait like 3 days and then contact like customer service, like already like kind of oddly a little shady. And in the end, yeah, basically he didn't get his TV and the seller potentially could have been a scammer. We don't know. But Lazada, obviously, at first it was quite difficult, I think, for the guy to get his refund. I think there were some rules for getting that refund, but now Lazada has come out and they've banned the seller and you know, they're trying to expedite the refund for this guy. But it's such a weird thing. See, you never know. And I guess, like, maybe, yeah, I think you have to do your research, right, when you're buying stuff online, especially like places like Lazada, because they're sort of a middleman like e-commerce site. So you just never know the credibility of a seller.
Absolutely. I don't know if this guy is the smartest guy ever or the dumbest one,
to buy a big ass TV on a freaking e-commerce site. Like, this guy is braver than all of our military, I think.
Yeah, that's the other thing. Like, I mean, I guess he probably did all his research. It was a Xiaomi smart TV, and at $300, that's actually a really good deal. I don't know the size of the TV. They didn't really say that, but like, yeah. But I mean, it's a good deal. But yeah, once again, I guess in the end, yeah, he didn't get a TV. He got just a little note. I like the letter, how it wished him like a happy life.
I know, when this guy is like the cause, like, just of twisted,
like like stick, yeah, and twist, like, stick and twist.
Absolutely amazing. Like, he's the note says, have a happy life, but this dude in question is the one giving him an unhappy life. That is amazing. Top tier. And over in Bangkok, a Thai quarantine hotel serves man a roach leg, then sues him for talking about it. Amazing stuff. But yes, another thin-skinned hotel is going after someone who dared to say something negative about the roach leg he was served. But yeah, this time the guest is not backing down, and he's got the cockroach leg photos to prove it. And oh my god, you gotta see these pictures. They're kind of gross, my god. But yes, this dude, Dunyawit. I know, it's so nasty. It's disgusting. It's like perched on top of the piece of food, and it's like, oh my god, shivers down my spine, and not in a good way. But yeah, this person, Dunyawit Padung Singh, sorry if I'm butchering his name, I probably am, fresh out of quarantine at a hotel southeast of Bangkok in Chonburi province, said he was willing to publicly debate the hotel, now suing him for daring to criticize its facilities and services.
Oh dear.
I know. So he was responding to the Ambassador City Jomtien Hotel, southeast of the capital in Chonburi province, which said that it had filed defamation suits against people who tried to discredit it by spreading lies that the rooms were shabby and the food was unsanitary. But I think the evidence is just a little bit overwhelming, what with the moldy, fungus-infested mattresses and the cockroach leg on the piece of food. Holy shit. But yeah, he said, so he had arrived from Bangkok to from San Francisco, and he chose to isolate himself at the government-backed facility because it was free, which he regretted. Because, like, he said it was not just poor Wi-Fi access and an obsolete television, but fungus in the bed and an awful smell that he couldn't escape despite changing his room 3 times. Holy shit.
Oh, no. Ooh, yeah. That's not good.
Yeah, man. And just, like, with all the time in the world on his hands, he carefully documented the deficiencies in a ton of photos, which you should totally go see yourself. So gross.
Oh, yeah. That's scary. I mean, I think for anyone, I guess for Thai people, whenever you come back, if you come back, you have to be in quarantine. And I think you get to choose the free quarantine hotels, which could be, you know, I guess like of this ilk. you could pay for, I guess, like some fancier hotels. But yeah, but those, yeah, you got to pay for. So, yeah. So
yeah, dude. I think they should have paid him to stay there.
Yeah, not cool.
Nasty.
Well, our next story is essentially the Immaculate Conception has happened again, Summer. It has happened again. In Jakarta. An Indonesian woman claims a gust of wind knocked her up, and police are actually investigating. So, a young widow in Sianjur, West Java, apparently says that she became pregnant without sexual intercourse. Siti Zaina claimed that, after giving birth to a baby girl, one afternoon she was praying and lying face down, and all of a sudden she felt wind enter her body through her vagina.
Amazing.
And then became pregnant. And, I mean, yeah. So she said that she obviously gave birth, And she felt pain in her stomach, like, you know, shortly after the weednip like blew into her, and realized that, yeah, her stomach was getting bigger and bigger, and she got like pregnant, obviously. And then there was no like sort of irregularities with the baby or her pregnancy. But yeah, just a very interesting claim, shall we say?
I mean, like, I think Sis has to drop the tutorial because it says that she was praying and then around 15 minutes later, she felt pain in her stomach before it grew bigger as if she was really pregnant. Mm. Then she gave birth after 15 minutes. Wait, what? Amazing.
Yeah, so, I mean, and the thing is, like, the police are investigating it. Okay, not the paranormal, like, claim or, like, supernatural claim of it, but I think more that you just trying to want to make sure that there's no fake news that's being thrown out, especially if, you know, it's going to foster some wild, like, rumors flying around, you know, of a magical baby. So, yeah, it's all so bizarre. So bizarre.
I am invested. I need to know every single update about this story. I need to know the details. I need to know when E! Entertainment is going to sign her for, you know, a whole ass reality show. I'm invested. I'm going to follow her.
Yeah, I think a big part of it is because, like, she separated from her husband a while back. So, you know, having a baby out of wedlock is a huge stigma in Indonesia. So I think that they feel that there might have been something that played a part in the story. But hey, who knows, man? Who knows?
Who knows?
Could have been the wind.
Could have absolutely been. That's exactly what I say when I fart. I'm trying to hide it.
Shall we say born with the wind?
Red, you go. Where shall I go? What shall I do?
Frankly, my dear, I don't give a damn.
Goodbye. Summer has left the chat. And over in Yangon, woo! Fear that China will secure junta rule feeds rumors of conspiracy in Myanmar. Woo, this one is a big one. I mean, like, if you would have internet access for, you know, the past few weeks, you have known about the conflict in Myanmar, and will we? Now it's like seemingly escalated through the power of the internet. It's like a whole bunch of conspiracy theories, and yeah, I myself would not know what to trust. We had a flight from Kunming loaded with Chinese IT techs to seal off Myanmar's internet. Chinese security forces masquerading as Burmese soldiers. An uncertain dictator evacuating his family. We're not even playing two truths, one lie because I don't actually know what is happening. But yeah, these are just some of the rumors swirling through Myanmar just, you know, maybe two or so weeks after the military staged a coup, which the public has refused to accept. And holy shit, I don't know. So a lot of pictures have emerged and people were calling out the appearance of unfamiliar, fair and light-skinned soldiers blocking the central bank on number one industrial road in Yangon's Yankin Township, casting doubts about the identity of the strange soldiers. People are spreading rumors and yeah, I don't know. I don't know what to believe. But this person said, are those made in China? Because Myanmar military are not fair like them, said this one user who tweeted the photos of the soldiers wearing the standard army uniforms. But yeah, this comes after anger's run high against China and Russia after they vetoed a UN Security Council condemnation of the coup. And large crowds have gathered in front of their embassies in Myanmar to denounce their government's inaction. Holy shit!
Oh man, all I gotta say, it's like it's just heating up, and this is all kinds of like conspiracy theories and like crazy stuff.
Yeah, man, and we haven't seen Aung San Suu Kyi in public since she was taken into custody, and yeah, I don't know. I don't actually know what to say or think about this, but I hope it all gets settled soon.
Well, this next story is really, I mean, I don't know where to start, but okay, we'll start with the so-called beginning and then we'll move on. So in Malaysia, obviously, there's a very infamous website called Sugarbook. Sugarbook is, how would you say what Sugarbook is, Summer?
Well, based on my knowledge. It's basically
a site.
Well, just as a child of the internet, it is a wonderful platform in which people can go to find sugar daddies and be a sugar baby, or offer a sugar baby to be a sugar daddy to them. Good platform. Great for y'all.
Yeah. Yeah, I tried to apply to be a sugar baby. I was rejected on the spot. So.
Oh, shit. Now I got to try. I
hate them. But no, yeah. So basically, that's what it is. And because of apparent investigations where they were potentially, you know, those potential adult content and maybe prostitution or potential fraudulent activities, Sugarbook was actually banned. But Sugarbook.com was banned online, and the owner went back and changed its name to Sucrebook.com, Sucrebook.com, to go online. But yeah, because that's a thing. And then because of the Malaysian Communications and Multimedia Commissions Act, MCMC, you know, they were thinking that, you know, the sugar book is like an adult site, essentially. And what really sort of blew up was the fact that they did a list of popular universities where you could find their sugar babies, and kind of outed like a bunch of like universities based off of their quote unquote data. So yeah, they became, you know, like obviously notorious. And then what happened was Darren Chan, the owner, was arrested actually, and he's now cooperating with police to essentially try to find out if his site was being used wrongly. So yeah, it's kind of a fiasco. Sugarbook is actually in Singapore, the US, in Thailand. It's a quote-unquote pay-to-play dating site where sugar daddies and babies meet. So kind of a interesting fiasco.
Oh my God, I think it's freaking hilarious. They went and made... so what they did, they named it Sucrebook, as in sugar in French is sucre. So they named it Sucrebook to like freaking... You know,
oh, Sucrebook.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, yeah, to circumvent the law, which is freaking hilarious. That is like, you can't say they're not creative. I mean, if that well, that fails, we can like go down the list and go like Azuka book next.
You just keep on like changing it. But yeah, I think more than anything, it was because of the article that it released. Like it outed like, you know, the top 10 universities in Malaysia where you could find sugar babies, and I think Sunway University apparently like topped the list, which immediately like caused a whole bunch of like drama. And I think that's why they're under investigation for, you know, adult or misleading content, and also potential you know, soliciting of prostitution, and causing amazing
oh God. Over in Bali, oof, Russian fugitive wanted by Interpol is on the loose in Bali. Holy shit. But yeah, immigration authorities in Bali have put out a public notice in search of two Russian fugitives, one of whom is reportedly on Interpol's red notice list, who have been on the loose since last week. But yeah, so the first of two fugitives, Andrei Kovalenko, he escaped from Ngurah Rai immigration office, and as he was being moved to the immigration center in Denpasar, and holy shit, that sounds like a movie plot right here. So prior to bolting, Kovalenko, who is also known by his alias Andrew Ayer, had just received a visit from a Russian woman named Yekaterina Tropkina. She is believed to have assisted him. So Putu Sahendra Tresnadita, who heads the Information and Communication Department at the office, said that Andrew Ayer is actually an Interpol fugitive who is on the red notice list. And the 32-year-old was previously serving time in Korobokan prison for a narcotics case. Woo! And yeah, so far there has been no significant development in the search. So like, if any of you see these two, please call the authorities. But also, these pictures are real interesting. There's like a whole, there are these wanted photos with face mask Photoshop on top just because we're in a pandemic. And yeah, this will be useful for anyone who's actually on the lookout for these two. Call the authorities.
I know. That's so funny. Like, it's like, here's how they really look. And then here's like things that cover most of their face. And this is how they look. I guess, dude, you know, you're really on the lookout for.
Yeah, dude. And there's like two variations of masks as well. The N95 mask and the surgical mask, just in case. I love the dedication. Amazing. Yeah,
it's all in the detail. Devil's mm-hmm. in the detail, as they say.
True that.
Our next story is in Hong Kong, where, this is a mistake. Someone's head gonna roll. The government unknowingly gave a U.S. university, University of Chicago, by the way, to demolish a World War II military fort. So the government unknowingly gave the go-ahead for the demolition of a WW2 remnant in 2016 for the construction of a U.S. university's satellite campus, University of Chicago. Hong Kong's Antiquities and Monuments Office, AMO, apparently only learned about this like 2 years ago. There was a wall basically that was part of a military fort called Jubilee Battery, which was, you know, used in WW2, built in 1930s. You know, it was a fort that had military barracks and gun emplacements for artillery as part of like Britain's key coastal defense arsenal in that area. Because of, I guess, I don't know, administrative issues, they gave permission for it to be torn down. Unfortunately, it's been torn down, and now a beautiful, beautiful school is there. But and unfortunately, a part of history has gone.
Damn. I'm just thinking about, you know, how in Singapore we've just recently had unsanctioned deforestation by accident in Kranji. I'm like, I guess these things happen or whatever. Nervous laughter.
Yeah.
Hell.
Yeah. I don't know, man. This one. Yeah, but I guess like, yeah, someone. Yeah, it's one of those things where like, wait, look, there's a wall here that looks kind of, let's just get rid of it. And no one says anything. What was that wall part of again? No one asked that before they knocked it down. So
what so an sad, oopsie poopsie. So mm-hmm. And our top story for the week, we go over to Manila, where a Filipino in New York City develops a blood disease after getting Moderna's COVID vax. Oopsie. But yeah, so this Filipino living in New York City developed complications after getting the first shot of Moderna's COVID-19 vaccine. So Luz Legazpi, who is 72, had been living in the city for almost 8 years, survived a severe case of immune thrombocytopenia, which is also a lack of platelets, after getting the vaccine last month. So she told the news program Unang Balita that she really wanted to get the vaccine. Very responsible, good for you. And yeah, she said, "My child looked up where I could get a vaccine, and I thought that getting COVID was worse." You're right. But, you know, she didn't feel anything bad on the day that she got the shot, but the situation changed the morning after. So, and she says, "When I woke up in the morning after I brushed my teeth, I was gargling and I noticed that there was blood on my mouth. I thought that my toothbrush injured my gums, but I didn't expect that I was really expelling blood. When I opened my mouth, I saw blood had formed all over my mouth and blood also formed on my tongue. And blood just kept gushing out of my mouth. Even my nose was bloody." Oh, shit. But yeah, the elderly Filipina was confined for 2 weeks in the city's Elmhurst Hospital, where she was attended to by healthcare workers. And yeah, she really wasn't expected to survive the thrombocytopenia, and she will not be taking the Moderna shot, but added that she had no regrets for taking the first jab.
Oh, shit.
Oh, man. I mean, for all the anti-vaxxers and for anyone who was like afraid to take the vaccine,
they're going to use this as fodder. Yeah. Sucks.
Yeah. Yeah. It's a little scary. It is a little scary, though. I mean, I feel like a lot of people are just waiting. They're waiting for, you know, they always say like, you know, never buy the first gen of any like product, tech product. You got to wait for the second, you got to wait for the updates and then get the second version, the V2. So yeah, I feel like this is just going to make sure that a lot of people do that.
Yeah, man, it's like waiting for your friend to buy it and telling you whether it's good or not. But yeah, it sucks that, you know, the anti-vaxxers are going to use this as fodder for their ideologies. But yeah, dude, this is a very rare case, I would say. And
yes,
yeah, we don't talk about the billions, not billions, okay, the many other cases that have been successful. And yeah, let's get vaccinated, y'all. My opinion is not anyone else's.
Yes, the sooner the better, so we can all like travel around and be safe and happy in new places, not just sad and lonely in our rooms.
Exactly. But, exactly.
So, Summer, our guest this week is Jug from our BK Magazine family.
Hey.
So yes, Jug Sriananda, our friend from our sister magazine BK Magazine in Bangkok, wrote about, you know, this expat couple. They're YouTubers who have been key in pushing the plant-based boom in Bangkok thanks to the informative videos. And yeah, we talked to Jug about what it's like.
Welcome, Jug. How are you?
I'm great. Yeah, how are you guys?
Yeah. Good. Very welcome to the show.
Yeah, this is my first time in the podcast. So, yeah, excited. Ooh. Excited. I'm stoked for this. Yeah.
Mm-hmm. We're very honored to have you on.
Popping the podcast cherry.
Likewise. Yes. All right.
So we're here to talk about sort of the plant-based boom in Bangkok and Thailand. You had a chance to sit down with two prominent YouTubers, but we'll get to that part. But how has like Thailand and Bangkok like taken to sort of the vegan plant-based life?
Well, I think over the past, I think, couple of years, you know, I think me personally, I've seen a lot more restaurants, you know, that cater to vegans or vegetarians, and a lot of because I basically also write about events for BK Magazine, so I would stumble across you know, plant-based events, and one of them, you know, was Food the Future, so it got me very interested. But I think, you know, a lot more at least Bangkokians are, you know, giving interest into, you know, the plant-based cuisine. But me personally, I think it's like, it's more of like a lifestyle, if you can say. But yeah, more and more, you know, people, most of them are young, I think my age, you know, 20s, 30s, 40s, you know, they're giving it a try. Yeah, it's looking bright.
With so many like Thai, like I feel like a lot of like Thai food, I'm sure there's like great vegetarian or vegan food before, but like what are like, as far as I know, like most of the Thai food that I eat is always like meat based, you know, like usually the vegetables are always just on the side. Like what are like some sort of variations of like common dishes that you've seen? Or tasted even?
Oh, well, Thai food, well, it's tricky because like you said, because Thai food is very heavy on meat. Thai people love eating meat. Thai people eat meat with vegetables. But then for Thai dishes, I'm not so sure. But like if it's like international dishes, like, you know, the burger, you know, like the lasagna, pasta, and think something more along that alley, you know, we've seen a lot of, you know, plant-based renditions of those dishes. But you know, for Thai food, well, I haven't really seen, you know, plant-based Thai dishes yet, maybe because like I'm not really, you know, adventurous enough. But I think, you know, Thai people are still, you know, I think we're more adventurous than many other people when it comes to eating. So I think, you know, there, I wouldn't be surprised if, you know, say in the future, you know, we would see more, you know, plant-based Thai dishes, you know, plant-based pad Thai or whatever. But pad Thai is just really like, you know, it's like stereotypical Thai dishes. Like, there's so much more, you know, Thai dishes than that. But yeah, I would be really excited to see if it happens. So, yeah.
Yeah, man. I'm just thinking like of the opportunities here, like a pad krapao that could be like, nowadays they're like soy crumbles, you know, so to kind of mimic minced meat. Something, the way through the Thai people's hearts could be through a very good, a damn good pad krapao, but hold the meat.
Yes, yes, yes. I fully agree. Like
right,
tofu,
you get
know,
on it.
You can make some tofu instead. Yeah. I think it's already, it must be there because pad Thai, no, not pad Thai, oh my God. Because pad krapao is like our comfort food, you know. If we go, if you come back from abroad, you know, the first dish you want to take, you want to eat is pad krapao because it's like, it's our comfort food. It makes us think of home. Mm. yeah. So that's, yeah.
Oh my gosh.
What I think.
Oh, I just miss Bangkok so much. And now that you guys have this veggie boom, I want to be part of it, dude. Like me and every single Singaporean out there, we're just dying to get back into Bangkok. For real.
Nice. I didn't know that. Yeah.
We're all dying here, dude.
Yeah.
Well, you got a chance to meet up with Max and Joanna Hellier, who are, I guess, like they're plant-based like bloggers and bloggers, right? And how was that experience? And like, they're doing a lot to, I guess, like push, I guess a more sustainable lifestyle when it comes to food in Bangkok. Like, how has that popularity sort of increased so pretty quickly, I feel, in Bangkok?
Yes. Well, I think, you know, I think thanks to, you know, people like them, you know, we've become more aware of like, cause first, at least me personally, I thought plant-based was just centered on food. But then when I, you know, interviewed them and I discovered that, oh, you know, it's much more than just food. It's a lifestyle. So it's almost like, you know, like vegan, you know. I was surprised to discover that, you know, going plant-based, you know, can help save the planet and whatever. It would be a lot less food waste, you know, because they told me some like surprising facts about food waste. Like, I think if food waste was to be a country, it would be like the third biggest, like after America and China or something like that. But like, yeah, that fact certainly blew me away. And I was like, I was, you know, more aware of how, you know, how the way we eat, you know, kind of affects like the world as a whole. So I think first, you know, we gotta like understand how, like what it is, what it means to, you know, be to live the plant-based life. I don't know if I can say that.
Oh,
yeah, because they also told me like
go ahead.
No, because like they told me like, you know, you have to remind yourself why you're doing this, like why, what you're doing it for, and how it can help, you know, the planet, the world, and humans in general. So yeah, I think it's gonna appeal to, you know, many young generations like us. Yeah, so we live for the present and the future, and I think it resonates what like the plant-based movement is trying to do, and guys like Max and Joanna here are like they're kind of like the voice box that's getting things across to people in Bangkok, and that's how I would like to put it that way. So yeah, they're only doing great things right now, so I'm really excited and for them and for what they're doing. Yeah.
I mean, the science is there, like about like your, I guess the science is there about like, you know, your sort of carbon footprint when it comes to eating more plant-based diet. But I guess like the switch is always going to be like tricky for people. I mean, here in Singapore, I think it's, I shouldn't just say here in Singapore, but just generally like this things like meatless Mondays, like I think people are taking baby steps towards it, and I wonder, I think like to or Thailand, you have so much delicious food that I feel that that sometimes maybe like, yeah, like that flavor would be enough to convince people to like switch to to more plant-based stuff.
Yes, I completely agree with what you just said, because I think Thai food is just all about the flavor. It's Thai food's all about the flavor. So if they get the flavoring right for the plant-based dishes and meals, I think more Thai people, you know, would you know, kind of like change their minds and like give it a try, you know.
And just to hear just the sheer scale, just the visualization that we have, that all the trash, sorry, not all the trash, that all of the food waste could form a third country, which is obviously bigger than Singapore or many times over the size of Singapore. Oh my God, that's scary.
Yeah, it's huge. It's certainly a surprising fact. I think, well, honestly, I think most people are skeptical of how it will taste, because, you know, we eat food because it makes us happy. It makes us full.
Yeah.
We eat food for like the, we eat food for the taste. But then if we get over that, because now plant-based food is just more than just, it's more than just how it tastes. It's about the health. It's about saving the planet. You know, I think it's the way forward, but yeah, it's going to be challenging. Well, it's going to be challenging for some Thai people, because, you know, when we eat like normal dishes, even if you're here in Thailand and you sit in like a street food stall, in front of you, there will be like, you know, glasses and bowls of condiments in front of you. And then you would see like locals, you know, putting in sugar, you know, chili and chili vinegar and whatever. It's, you know, it's in our culture that it's all about the flavor. But I'm confident because I think I saw in Max and Joanna's videos, I mean, when they were reviewing burgers, and they say it tasted just like the original one. So I think humans can do anything, you know. Like, I'm not too worried that plant-based Thai food will taste like bad, if you know what I mean. So yeah. That's what I would say. Yeah.
Yeah. And I'm seeing this very interesting problem as well, that now, because technology is so great and now we have many plant-based meats, like the one from Impossible Foods that actually bleeds, which is crazy, by the way. there's this new problem that some vegans find that they can't eat these plant-based meats because they're too real. What do you think about this very fun problem?
That's a bit funny. Well, it's too real. Well, I mean, if it depends on the person, I guess. But if I was a vegan, then, well, I don't know. I personally wouldn't care if it's too real. I mean, if it's real, then it's better because
like it's a substitute for what you used to eat when you used to eat meat.
Yeah.
Do you think?
I think so. But it wouldn't really matter if it bleeds, even though it's not like beef juice or whatever. But as long as there's no animal based product there, I mean, it should be fine, because I think people are seeing the fun side of making plant based food by doing that, by adding, I think you mentioned to me, heme. You know, to the patty. Yeah, I think it's just the fun side of, you know, eating plant-based food, because it's like the wow factor. Like, oh, you know, this, it bleeds like just like the real one. I'd rather see the funny side of it than, you know, going like being, you know, like, how do you say it? Like cynical and whatever.
Yeah, man, I totally get you. Like, as a freaking millennial that spends money on brunch, you tell me a freaking plant burger bleeds, I'm going to buy 10.
Exactly.
It's marketing.
I'm like, I don't care. It looks nice. It looks nice, and I'm gonna eat it. So take my money.
Exactly. And I'm gonna post it on Instagram just because I'm a millennial.
Yeah.
But what Summer says is quite accurate. As in, like, the science now is so great that like you really can replicate like so much meat products that you know, I think for a long time people were like, oh, you're just gonna eat like a whole bunch of like tasteless like tofu and leaves. Mm. But I think like now there's like
this is a very so many primitive things. Way of putting it.
Yeah. So I think like that's what a lot of people thought, like, you know, being plant-based was, and you know, and also like, you know, I think in your article you also chat with them about like little sort of myths, things like not getting enough protein, and you can find protein and you can find protein in so much like vegetables and legumes, yep. and whatnot, and also more than that, like mm-hmm. the cost. I think a lot of people think that like being plant-based, because it sounds so fancy, that it's really expensive, right? But it really, the options are very affordable. Certainly there are certain products for sure that are like, you know, maybe a little pricey, mm-hmm. but like for the most part you can pretty much find almost everything that you want in a plant-based lifestyle.
Yeah, well, I think, you know, I think the plant-based culture here in at least in Bangkok, I think it's still in its infancy, I think, because like it would be natural for people to assume that plant-based food is pricey, because you see these like gourmet looking plant-based burgers, you know, and you must be like, oh, this must cost a lot. But I think for the culture here to be more mature, you know, I think plant-based food, you know, must be easily, you know, cooked at home.
Mm.
But then another problem here is that a lot of people in Bangkok like to eat out because it's convenient for them. Mm. You know, because you don't have to spend a lot of time, you know, cooking at home. Me personally, I like to cook, but then sometimes I'm just like, you know, I come back from work, you know, I'm too, you know, tired and lazy to just cook, and then I have to wash my dishes and whatever. And the natural thing to do is just to grab a bite after work, you know, outside. But then if you know, in the future, let's say if there are more, you know, affordable plant-based restaurants or, you know, street food, I don't know about that, but maybe definitely like food trucks, I think that would, you know, give us a lot of like alternatives, because I think right now like plant-based food is only in like restaurants that are mostly like in downtown. They're a bit on the pricey side. But I you know, if it works, I think that's the way for, you know, for people like Max and Joanna to, you know, consider, because like I said, like Thai people love eating outside. Yeah. And for cheap, in fact.
Mm, that's cool. Yeah. Rhea, you said that you cook. Have you tried cooking any plant-based dishes?
Oh man. Hey, well, to be honest, I only started cooking when COVID hit last year. So like the dishes that I cook, you know, has beaten them. They're easy, mostly stir fried. Sometimes I make shabu at home, and shabu has beef, and you know, so yeah, I'm not quite there yet. In fact, quite a long way from it. So yeah.
Oh, good. Baby steps. Baby steps.
Yeah. Like maybe I said, it's going to be maybe a challenge for people like me. Yeah, but if they manage to make it work, then that's really nice. Yeah.
Mm.
Yeah.
Do you think people are going to these restaurants? You said that there are some downtown, but I don't know. Are these restaurants?
Yeah, a lot of them are.
Oh, that's nice. Yeah. I guess I'm trying to see if people are actually going to, you know, adopt these plant-based lifestyles, and mm-hmm. if it's actually popular right now in Thailand. What do you think?
Oh, well, I think it still is popular. And well, another challenge for that is Thai people love new trends. It's not hard for us to like follow a new trend, because it comes every now and then, it comes every year, every 3 months and whatever. But the real challenge for Thai people to you know, to break this culture into Thai people is to make it stick in the long run, because like Thai people love new fads. We're neophiles. Right now we have a thing for croissants, which I find to be a bit ridiculous. Well, croissants are nice, but why croissants? I don't understand. And last year it was burnt cheesecake and it was jiggly pancakes. So like, I don't want pan-based. Yeah. So I don't want pan-based movement just to be one of another, you know, jiggly pancakes or, you know, croissants, and then it would just be disappeared in the next year. You know, that would be really sad because, you know, I think a lot of people like Max and Joanna and a lot of other plant-based restaurant owners, they've been, you know, they put in a lot of effort, time and effort, you know, blood, sweat and tears to make this happen. So like, I don't want like for the next year or two, you know, people will forget about plant-based movement. But I think currently like people are still coming. There's like at least in the last year, there has been new restaurants that have been opened that are plant-based. A lot of restaurants, like a lot of top grade restaurants, are offering plant-based meals. So I think we're off to a great start in terms of like kind of like introducing or gently nudging Thai people to, you know, turn their heads and like give plant-based meals or plant-based lifestyle a try. But if they continue to do it, I don't see any problems of it not being able to, you know, make it work. But like I said, the challenge is to make it more than just a trend, because like a trend and a lifestyle is a completely different thing. So that's what I would like put it. So yeah, I for one fully support the plant-based movement. They're doing great things, you know. This it's like good for your health, I think. It's leaving a lot less carbon footprint, so I support that, even though I love meat, you know. But yeah, it's I think they're onto a great start, but there's, you know, a few more challenges for them to they have to overcome for them to stay, you know, for the long run.
Cool.
Awesome. Cool. Thank you, Jacques, for coming down and chatting with us. Yeah, it does look as though there is a cuisine that can like really make like plant-based food amazing. I feel like that would be Thai cuisine.
Mm-hmm.
True.
Yeah, because tastes nice. But yeah, so I'm excited to see if that pops up. And I'm adamant that it must be nice. It must be great. Yeah.
I can't wait for the plant-based pot kapow.
Yeah.
Amongst other stuff.
I think it's already here, but I've yet to try it.
Damn it. Now I've got to start a Google Doc of all these places. And I'll just like, when the second border's open, I'm just going to be in there like with my stretchy pants ready to eat.
Yeah, right. Once the world is back to normal, you know.
Yeah.
Let's come here and see how it is.
Yes, sir.
Yeah. This is a giant spoon just traveling with a giant spoon. Well, thank you, Jug. We will talk to you soon.
Thanks, Jug.
All right. Thank you so much. Thanks so much, Fam and Summer. It's been a pleasure.
Take care.
See you.
All right.
Yo, I'm serious about that plant-based pad krapao. Like, whoever makes it, I'll give you one voucher that's good for a post-corona hug. Yeah. Just putting out there.
I think that's so much. There's so much. There's like green curry that would be delicious. That would be... Papaya salad's kind of already like almost plant-based. Oof. I guess fish sauce. Like they probably need to try to find like a way to make like the same like fermented like flavor profile of fishy stuff. Maybe that's would be like the tricky part. Yeah,
that's true. But I think there's some vegan fish sauces which blew my absolute freaking mind. So yeah, maybe that's the case. But absolutely. Also, as like a staunch supporter of, you know, salted egg sometimes. Yeah, I don't know how that plays out for me, because like I'm just gonna be real stubborn. It is like up there in one of my favorite Thai foods, I would say.
Yeah, I think my favorite dish would also be kapau. So like, I think like that would be, yeah, I would love to try like a completely like plant-based version of that. I bet you it would still be delicious. As long as it's like spicy. Mm-hmm. I think the flavor profiles are so good in Thailand that like, I think it just allows for a delicious like local plant-based food. And I think that's always the first step, right? I feel that even in Singapore, if you ate like, you know, like a local version of something that's plant-based, it's probably like the easy sort of like, okay, you can see it. There's sort of a proof of concept. It's not too foreign. And yeah, I think that's maybe a way to get people on board.
True that. I guess it's the same way with like things like the Impossible meat patties and Beyond Meat, all of those like plant-based patties that were like made to substitute actual meat. Totally scary, but interesting concept. Like, I think it's actually what will help bridge the gap, you know, between what's foreign and what we're familiar with.
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm. When you know what it is, it's easier to eat.
True that. And I'm just thinking about how we're going to localize, not really localize, but how do we insert these plant-based meats into our local dishes? Like, I'm Hainanese. You're going to tell me there's like a proper substitute for the steamed chicken that is like basically the key to this whole dish?
Yeah.
A bit skeptical, I would say. Yeah.
That's a challenge. So I think we need to get our audience to go try to find the best plant-based food and let us know.
Let's go, technology. We got to catch up. We got lots to do. Let's go.
Well, that's all for this week. We will catch you next week. Bye.
Bye.
Thanks for listening. If you'd like to support Coconuts and our weird and wondrous stories, you can become a Coco Plus member at coconuts.co/membership, make a patron payment at coconuts.co/patron, or buy our fresh merch at the Coconut Shop at shop.coconuts.co. Subscribe to the podcast and leave reviews. Tell us how you feel and what you like and don't like. We're excited to hear from you.
The Coconuts Podcast delivers impactful, weird, and wondrous reporting by our journalists on the ground in 8 cities. Singapore, Bangkok, Hong Kong, Manila, Jakarta, Kuala Lumpur, Yangon, and Bali. Listen to headline news and insightful interviews on matters large and small, designed for people located in or curious about Southeast Asia and Hong Kong. The Coconuts Podcast is a Coconuts Media production. Our hosts are Summer Lee and Vim Shamugam. Our executive producer is Byron Perry. Our production manager is Clarissa Cortez, and our editor is Raina Lim.